Let's see. This is just the first time you...
There it goes. Are you working now? It is working now. Okay, so this little recorder is working. So I just got to keep this near me, I guess, somehow. And we're doing Hebrews chapter 12. All right, so that's on page 414 in the paperback book. And here we go. Follow the beacon of the heart. Persevere in its way, letting go of dreams as the heart lovingly shines its light on them. Jesus is given as a symbol because he was faithful to the way. He remained focused on the true desire of the heart, and he listened to it in all things. I can't tell you how much I love that paragraph. You too, huh? It's inspirational, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And obviously what it says to me, and we'll see, maybe see if it says the same thing to you guys or if it says something different. It's a reminder, you know, to me of my true desire to be always, you know, inner focused. You know, like if somebody says something to me before I respond to... You know, check within and make sure I'm always responding from the heart and never responding from the ego. What's it mean to the rest of y'all?
That too, but mainly the faithfulness in always being there and going there.
Mm.
Not like sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Randomly, you know, but always.
Yeah. It reminded me of how much I don't go there sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I read one thing about Jesus. It said he allowed himself to be fully loved by God. And we don't. You know, we're so preoccupied with everything. But if we are faithful to go in all the time, then we can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been trying it for years, but... You know, that's what just spoke to me anyway.
Yeah, I love it. Jesus is given as a symbol because he was faithful to the way. He remained focused on the true desire of the heart, and he listened to it in all things. Do not be tricked by your own desire, which does not come to you from the truth of the heart. Question everything by the heart, and you set out in the way of Jesus. So obviously that's reminding us to not be distracted by what I'm going to call our petty desires. You know, like, gosh, I wish, you know, he or she would act different. Wish they'd quit talking so much. Wish they weren't so clumsy. Wish they respected me more, you know. Wish I had more money. Wish the house was cleaner, wish the weather was warmer, wish the days were longer. Wish the dog didn't want to go in and out all the time. You know, just all, I mean, those are all desires, right? But they're petty desires. And you know, just to not be distracted by those, not to let go of those and remember what I want. And then when I remember what I want, you know, this is something that you're always reminding us of. This is why I'm pointing at you, but when I remember what I want, then everything is the way. Everything is the pathway. The dog wanting to go in and out is to help me awaken, right? If someone's talking too much, that's to help me awaken. If the weather isn't my dream weather, that's to help me awaken. And it changes everything if I remember what I really want and don't get confused by the petty desires.
And that's what we're learning in Buddhism, to question our thoughts. Are you sure?
Yes.
You know, if we were judging or analyzing, you know, are you sure it's very helpful? Or is this thought helpful? Or what am I doing now? Just things to bring us back.
The way of the heart is the way of love and attentiveness. In love, you are attentive
to your way. Through love, the way that is not true is revealed. So it's really interesting, again, it's saying that, you know, the way of the heart, of course, is love, which, you know, I think it's nice to also say gentleness there, because that means no judgment, right? And attentiveness, which means we are really paying attention to ourselves. And then it says, through love, the way that is not true is revealed. So that means if I'm really being attentive in a gentle way and something comes up in me that's not reflective of truth, like a judgment, I am going to see it, right? But I'm going to see it with my loving attention. And because I see it then, I might not fall into it. You know, you fall into what you don't see, right? You trip into the hole that you don't see. The hole you do see, you don't have to trip into it.
Or you could be standing in the hole. You don't necessarily, you know, falling out. You could be, unknowingly, you could be like standing right in that hole, which is perspective.
Yes.
Yes. Without knowing it, you're already without even falling, you're already, you know, you've decided that you're standing in the.
Yeah, so it's wonderful to have this gentle attentiveness that will still see the untrue. But yeah,
let's. There you are.
Yeah, there you are.
Or as
gentleness to ourselves.
Yeah.
I saw you.
I saw that
one.
Yeah.
Again.
Walking slowly and surely, paying attention as you go, and you shall be shown the way of dreams, that you may let go and say goodbye to them. This is the way of the heart, because this is the way of love. I also like that, walk slowly and surely, paying attention as you go. I mean, this is really, I think this is quite beautiful. Verses 7 to 11. The trials and tests that you may perceive as you walk this path to me are not tests given to you by God in order to pass to your own freedom. You are free. In your freedom, you draw your test to you, that you may know your freedom through your choice. And I, you know, what I have noticed on this spiritual path is that often I will go through an experience and I'm going to just say, not at my best. You know, like I do let the ego come up and I get frustrated or annoyed or angry or whatever. But then if I look at that in a very non-judgmental way, I notice I have willingness. It's like the same thing comes around, and the next time I go through it in a completely different way. You know, I've had that experience several times. One that's coming to my mind right now is last summer, a year and a half ago, my computer broke. And I was just so frustrated every step of the way. You know, and I go into the computer place and expect them to say they could fix it in a day, and they're like 2 weeks. And I get mad at them because they said 2 weeks and I expected a day. And then it ended up being 3 weeks. And I got mad at them because I didn't even do the 2 weeks. And the whole thing was frustrating. This year, this summer, my computer broke for, it actually took twice as long to get it fixed. I had to go back and forth to the computer place a number of times before they figured out what was wrong. And not even the most minute frustration came up. I was at peace the whole time. And that happens to me a lot. And the reason is because the first time, even though I was getting frustrated, I was actually watching my frustration without judging myself. I was noticing it, and I was being honest with myself about it. And something in that heals it, because a year later it comes around. I go through, you could even call it a worse experience. I mean, like I said, it took twice as long. And there was nothing this time. So, and what this is saying, this isn't God testing you, this is you. But that's because you want to see for yourself that you're healing. You want to see for yourself that, you know, you're dropping the things of the past, you know, the ego of the past, and that you're learning to accept all things as they are. So starting with sentence 4. Remember that each circumstance is a gift given by you for your own healing, and you accept each gift graciously within the gratitude with which it is given. So, you know, if somebody is heavily criticizing you, for example, just and even completely wrong, and you know they're completely wrong, their perception of you is just all messed up, what this is saying is, you know, that's a gift. Mm-hmm. And if you can allow them to criticize you from a very messed up perception and it not bother you, then you know that, you know, there's something there has healed in you. If not, then you know there's something there that still needs healing. And you want to greet the circumstance with gratitude, being grateful that you have this healing opportunity. Because how are you going to get healed without healing opportunities? You know, you need them. Yeah, you need them. Yeah, they're gifts. Verses 12 to 13. Relax and rejoice along your way. Welcome your lessons as they are given. You walk the way for each of your brothers, and they walk joyously beside you. Take each lesson in joy as it comes, and the way shall be level under your feet. Now, yesterday in my life, I did have an opportunity to do this. Someone wrote me an email, several paragraphs long, accusing me of a number of things. And at first, when I read the email, I was just a little surprised, you know, because I didn't expect it. But then what happened when I kind of sat back and relaxed was I noticed it started here first. There was just this incredible gratitude. Something arose in me that was just like, thank you so much for this opportunity. You know, thank you so much for this opportunity for me to meet this in grace, you know, in my heart and not leave my heart. And there was this joy that just kind of came up, and I embraced this experience, and it was very, very grateful for it, an honest gratitude. You have something to say, sir?
I don't think I can do what you do.
That's not true. I don't. I disagree.
But I am. It's very touching that to me. That the way you handle your critics, I'm not good with my critics.
I've had lots of practice. That's the truth. You know, my first experience with really strong criticism. I mean, we all get criticism throughout life, but my first experience with concentrated criticism was related to NTI.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I guess. I think it's. It's just so commendable to, you know, to have that capacity to be able to handle it, because I know firsthand that, you know, what it's like for you. I can't imagine what it's like for you, but I know that personally I've been like really devastated a few times by, you know, some unkind remarks, and I can't imagine what, you know, I guess that goes with the territory of being a teacher, am I right?
Yeah, it goes with the territory of being a teacher, it goes with the territory of being a leader. It goes with the territory of being a scribe. These are all somewhat visible, and people project onto them. But the difference is that when you still have the "I am bad" thought in you, mm-hmm. and somebody's projecting onto you, you don't really see clearly that they're projecting onto you. You think that they're
right.
They're seeing you. Yeah, they're seeing you. That's what you think. They're, you know, your mask has been pulled off, and they are seeing you for the awful thing that you really are. And that's why it hurts. When the "I am bad" belief is healed, which you not only realize, but you can actually see it. You can see them looking right through the filter of their mind, and you can see how you are colored by their perception. You see that it's almost like they're blinded. There's something right here that's blinding them. And they're looking at that, and they think they're looking at you. And that doesn't bother you. You know, you have compassion for that. But, you know, also what they say, it doesn't sting. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't do anything, because you understand they're really having a relationship with their own mind.
So would you say that part of it's the ability to take on a second person perspective? I mean, I know how I feel about the attack, so I have to I guess, discover or try to interpret the nature of, you know, where it's coming from. If so, that would be the ability to kind of, I don't know, somehow walk a mile in their shoes.
Yeah, it can be helpful if you understand them a little bit. But I think what's probably most important is to realize why you're hurting. To realize that you're hurting because you still believe you're bad. That's what's most important, I think. You know, like, again, if I yelled at you and said, "Damn it, Dan, you're such a paperclip." I mean, you know, that doesn't do anything because you don't think you're a paperclip. You know, so it's like, what's up with her? I mean, you can clearly see it's my deal, right? If I'm mad at you and calling you a paperclip, something's up with me. But if I knew you well enough to know where your weak spots were, and I happen to yell, "Damn it, Dan," you know, blah, 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 and I hit just the right one, then you're going to feel bad. And the reason you feel bad is because that's what you think of yourself. And so you don't see that it's just my deal. And the reason is, in that case, it's not just my deal. It's mine and yours. We share it. I have a blinder here, and you have a blinder here. And my blinder just knocked up against yours and caused some pain for both of us. But so I think what's most important is to realize that the reason these comments are hurting me is because I actually still have self-judgment about myself. That's the problem. Their comments are not the problem. My self-judgment is the problem. And start looking at that. And when you learn, I don't know why I'm using the word learn, because actually just through looking it happens naturally. But when it comes about where you no longer self-judge, then people will be able to criticize you. And two things will happen. One, you will actually see their filter. You'll see exactly what's going on with them, and you won't be mad at them or anything, but you will see it. And two, you might even do a change in the way they ask you to anyway. You know, just because, why not? If that's what you want me to do, I'll do it that way. You know, I mean, you know, because it's like no skin off your nose.
Right.
Yeah. So it just makes it completely benign. But the reason it's not benign now is because there's still self-judgment going on.
Yeah, and it's good to do the root cause inquiry if you're not sure what's causing the upset.
Yeah, I don't know if they know what the root cause inquiry is. Maybe I should print that thing out that I sent to you guys last week and bring it to them next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try.
I've heard it before, but I can't remember.
I teach it in the MPP program. It's a journaling process that I used to, whenever I was upset, to look underneath the upset to see what the root belief was underneath. And then I could be aware of the root belief. You know, if I think that you're just a rude, inconsiderate person, you know, I'm not getting the chance to look at what's in me that needs to be healed. But if I start asking, you know, if I start doing root cause inquiry to find out, you know, why I perceive you as a rude, inconsiderate person, well, she always says this, this, this. Okay, so she always says that, that, that. But why does that bother me? And I start looking down. At some point, I get to what's really going on with me. And then I can just pay attention to that with my awareness. But our awareness is actually healing. And so if I can look at the real cause of my upset with awareness, it will heal. But if I let it be covered up by the belief that you're rude or whatever I said, then I'm not healing it. So root cause inquiry is about going through the defense mechanisms and getting down to the real root of the problem so that you know why you're upset, the true reason.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try and remember to bring that for you guys next week.
I had a thing happen today twice. But the thing that I noticed was that it didn't hurt me, it didn't bother me like it would have in the past. Jim and I were sitting there talking, and we're studying this, not studying it, but we have a reading each day, and then we try to share how that affected us. And I found how to get my husband to share, but he's trying and he's doing a little bit better. But I usually start out to give him an example sort of thing, you know, and not put him on the spot. But anyway, so I'm doing the sharing, and as soon as I stop talking, he says to me, "You really have a bad stain on that shirt. Are you going to wear that today?" And I said, you know, that reminds me of what my dad used to say, that when
forget who he was talking about, but that they were counseling this young child, and, you know, they were giving him advice and whatever, and it seemed like the kid was listening and everything, and so he gave him the whole spiel, and then when as soon as he stopped talking, the little boy says, "Do you know how many ants came out while you were talking out of that hole?" I said, "You're just like that little kid." I said, "You weren't listening at all to what I was saying." And he just goes like that, you know. And but ordinarily that would have really set me off. Mm-hmm. I'm not listened to, nothing I say is important, you know, that kind of stuff. It didn't bother me, but I didn't really see it as an opportunity for healing that yet, not until now, you know. But then this afternoon, we weren't studying or sharing anything, but we were talking, and I was doing the talking, and he says to me as soon as I got through talking, "Is that broken?" You know, the little bottle that had the salad oil. I said, "You sure don't listen, do you?" He said, "Everything else seems to draw your attention away. You did it this morning, and now you're doing it again." But again, it didn't bother me. But now that we're saying, what is that all saying to me about my healing? You know, I noticed, what I did notice both times is that it didn't hurt me and it didn't bother
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
But I did go a little bit further and saying, well, what is this opportunity for my healing also? But I was real happy that it didn't hurt me.
Yes.
Like it would have.
Well, that's like what we read earlier tonight about the tests that we call to ourselves so that we can see our own progress. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was real pleased with that because ordinarily it would have. Mm-hmm.
And so the same that happened to me when we went to Houston. And when we do something, I do something totally different than routine, I can get very anxious. And I got very anxious in Houston, and it's like I accepted that. I was okay with that, whereas normally I would have tried to, like, push it down and you know, be normal, push it down. But I didn't. I just let it be there. So I thought that was a step in the right direction.
I agree. All right, so let's see where we are. I'm going to start at verse 12 again. Relax and rejoice along your way. Welcome your lessons as they are given. You walk the way for each of your brothers, and they walk joyously beside you. Take each lesson in joy as it comes, and the way shall be level under your feet. Have compassion for yourself and be firm in your desire. I love that. You know, some people misunderstand compassion for yourself, in that compassion means, oh, if I don't want to meditate today, I shouldn't. And, you know, one of the things that is stated right here, but also was stated very clearly in the teachings of Inner Ramana, I asked Inner Ramana, what do you do if you have really strong resistance? And he said, be gentle with yourself. Do it anyway. You know, don't listen to your resistance. When you listen to your resistance, you're actually not being gentle with yourself. And in fact, your resistance is going to get stronger. And in a Ramana, he calls it, he says it's like shouting into a cave. You shout into the cave, I don't want to do this. And then it comes back and you hear it, I don't want to do this. And so you believe it again. You go, that's right, I don't want to do this. That's right, I don't want to do this. And it just, you know, it gets bigger. And so he says, instead of shouting in the cave, just do it anyway. And, you know, so whatever your spiritual practice is. And so that's what this is really saying too. Have compassion for yourself and be firm in your desire, you know. Yeah, you know.
I like that compassion too, because I spent years that I sure didn't. I was just very judging of myself, critical
yes.
of myself, perfectionist and all of that. And now I'm starting to look, see my errors and be compassionate with it.
Yeah.
Embrace it and just let everything be as it is. So it's drilled in us, let everything be as it is. And that means the things that we think were bad, let that be there. Let that, accept that and embrace it.
She's a good MPP student. She's listening.
Most of us will have to be patient with gradual progress. So when the things that, when the obstacles show up, it's a disappointment. You know? It's sort of a divine disappointment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there it is again.
Yeah.
It's not listening. It never listens. It, there it is again, like, over and over.
I like to have the opportunity, and that's not always available, but to go by myself and to sit with the energy that's not the good energy, and just sit with that, and that's very helpful to me, to just embrace that. Mm. Just let the energy come up.
Things can always be improved, but there has to be some sort of resignation to, you know, my experience is there has to be some kind of like when the flaws or when those things show up, it's just like, you know, it's kind of a letdown, but then it's kind of an acknowledgement and resignation. It's like, okay, you know, I thought I let that chunk of darkness, you know, I thought I brought it to the light, but it is showing up again. And patient, you know, compassion and gentleness, those types of things go a long way.
Well, and you just used the word chunk. And so, you know, imagine that inside there's this huge boulder of, you know, guilt or unworthiness or whatever, and a chunk passes up. You did let that chunk go. There's just more of the boulder there. And eventually it all goes. But, you know, I found that with the I am bad belief or the guilt or the unworthiness, whatever you want to call it, my first letting go was 2 months long straight of it rising up, rising up, rising up. And when it was done, you know, there was this peace, this joy, this clarity. But then at another point, something else happened and more came. And this went on for, well, I think probably the last time I really remember it coming up was around the summer of 2008, and the first time was the fall of 2004, so almost 4 years of, you know, it coming up and then easing, and then coming up and then easing, and then coming up and then easing. And my interpretation of that is that's just gentleness. Because, you know, maybe we just couldn't handle it all at once, right? So it comes up in chunks rather than coming up all at once. But it was about 4 years. Now, since then, since that last bout, I don't remember having what I call the I am bad belief. What I still see is the I am bad thought. The thought shows up, but I don't believe it. That's different, right? That's different. The I am bad belief is something you feel in your whole body, right? And it just seems true, and it's hard to believe it's not true. But yeah, 4 years of different phases. And again, everybody's a little different, so, you know. But, yeah.
Well, the thought that I said, you know, thinking when you said that, then I really need to be grateful for every little chunk, because it's making a dent in this massiveness, you know, that we have.
That's a great way of looking at things. Be grateful for your for what you can let go of.
Yeah, and also be grateful for the gentleness. You know, if you can't handle it all at once, be grateful that it comes up, you know, apparently in little pieces over. You know, just be grateful. In fact, at one point, I decided to trust. I was a course student, an NTI student at the time, so I called it Holy Spirit. I decided to trust Holy Spirit to know my pace. Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's what I decided to do. So if, you know, if this was going to come out slowly over a number of years, I trusted Holy Spirit that that was what was best for me. And for me to want it faster, I really didn't know what I was asking for is what I decided. Yeah. But then, to be honest, when it's over with and you look back, you know, 4 or 5 years actually seems like it was pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So have compassion for yourself and be firm in your desire. Have compassion when you catch yourself dozing. Dozing is not real, and so it is not cause for chastisement. It is merely cause for being awake again, firm for the purpose of the heart. So what we call our screw-ups, you know, when, oh, I let him get to me and I, you know, I got angry and blah, 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 blah. This is calling that dozing. And it says that when you see that you were dozing, that's just merely a reason to wake up again. So instead of chastising myself for losing my temper with him or her or whatever, I say, ah, I see I lost my temper there. Time to get interfocused again. Right? That's a much different response. Love yourself and love your brothers, for the way of the heart is love. When the way of the heart is forgotten through the drowsiness of your day, rejoice that an error has been seen. Release the error in joy. Through this you continue the way in joy. So this is even taking it a step further. This is saying, when you realize you just said something pretty mean to somebody, you snapped, be grateful that you saw that. You know, be really grateful that you saw it, because if you didn't see it, it probably would have continued longer. Mm-hmm. But you did see it. You can call yourself back home as soon as possible. Hallelujah! You know, be really happy that you saw it and that you can return yourself home. You see how non-judgmental that is?
Yeah. It's like every time there's an upset inside is an opportunity for healing.
Yeah.
So, and it's true.
It's true.
We don't want to see it that way, but that's what's going on.
Yes. Verses 18 to 24. You have come to the threshold of yourself, and it is through the release of the past that you bid yourself welcome to enter. See all desires that stand as obstacles to the one true desire of the heart. Release them joyously and bid yourself welcome unto your heart. Let go of dreams. That is your only function here. Walk the way of the heart, for it is the path that leads you truly through the forest of dreams to the release of all belief in them. Worship in reverence and awe the true desire of the heart by giving your gratitude to it. So that's a really interesting sentence. And to be honest, way back in Luke chapter 4, it had a very similar sentence. It told us to nurse our willingness with gratitude so that the small babe could grow, the babe of our willingness. And now this is saying worship in reverence and awe, the true desire of the heart. So now our babe of willingness has grown into a true desire, and now he wants us to go from having gratitude for it to actually worshiping it. I mean, this is really asking you to have a lot of love for your own willingness. And the reason for that is whatever you give that love to is going to continue to expand and expand, that loving attention. So whenever you see your own willingness, just have a lot of love for it, because that's really a great, great treasure that we have is our willingness. Worship in reverence and awe the true desire of the heart by giving your gratitude to it. Through gratitude, desire is increased. Through desire, faith is given, and through faith, all things that are useful to healing are brought in peace to stand quietly before you, awaiting the final pronouncement of your decision regarding them. And the final pronouncement of our decision regarding them, it's not true, you know, it's not meaningful, you know, all I want is my joy, all I want is truth, all I want is love. This does not matter. You know, this does not matter. So that's the end of Hebrews 12. It looks like next week we're going to finish Hebrews entirely. Our book, we're getting closer and closer to the end of this book. So just to continue our tradition of having an assignment, what about just practicing compassion with ourselves this week and
if we notice that we have left the way, as it's been called in this chapter, the way of the heart, you know, go ahead and return, but have compassion and not judgment about that mistake or error or slip or whatever you want to call it, straying.
Yeah, compassion will always do the healing.
Yeah, yeah. So I will stop the recorder and we can do our little bit of silence.